everybody, and welcome to the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. For come rain, shine, or anything between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news you so love. I'm Ace Edwards, right alongside
Connor Balthasar.
And welcome to this week's weekly recap, where it's pretty standard except for the women's basketball news, which we're going to cover first, and then the Backcats. But before we get into that, I want to thank the sponsor of the episode, Greg Arthur. And if you want to support the show via sponsorship, you can donate as little as $1 per month to get your name read out at the beginning of every episode and our undying gratitude. Really, every little bit helps keep the show going and also helps just in general. But we'll start with the women's basketball news and perhaps the big news that we were all sort of anxiously awaiting was whether or not Ioka Lee would be returning for her, I think it's her COVID season next year. And we've received the answer to that question. And it is yes, she will be returning for another year in Manhattan. So Connor, what was your instant reaction to that?
I was very, very happy because that meant that we weren't going to have to go and like try and replace her scoring in the portal or try and find a similar post player. And it made me very happy as well because she's a known commodity and she's already great. She's probably going to walk away with the all-time scoring record at K-State now for her career. But yeah, I mean, there's really nothing to feel about this, but you know, just being really happy about it.
Yeah, and I know that you and I were speculating, and that was probably because you know we weren't exactly happy after the Colorado game, but there did seem to be a sense of finality to that last hug. Well, I guess that's not the last hug anymore. Yoki's back, and we're, yes, despite the fact that we had a very painful loss in the tournament, I am more than willing to jump right back on to the hype train for next year, which I know is literally 7 months away. But this upcoming year, the team has a genuine argument to be even better as it stands right now, and they still have 2 scholarships to give. That's insane.
Yeah, it's definitely going to take me a little while to start to really get excited for this next women's season because of just how this last one ended. So I'm trying to pace myself a little bit more for my own sanity. But I do think that that's a fair assessment on paper because pretty much everybody's coming back except for Gabby Gregory and then Heavenly Greer, I believe. And
also someone else transferred out. I don't remember who.
Oh, Jamia Harris.
Jamia Harris.
So there were 2 bench players who transfer out and then 1 graduate. And that leaves a little
Dollinger.
Bit. Oh, yeah, and Dollinger graduated. So just a few people leave, but there's still room to make a big splash in the portal. And you'd think K-State would be a pretty attractive destination, given Ioka Lee is back, just had a really good year last year, and bringing back Sundell and the Glenn twins. It's going to be a really big season next season, especially with Ioka Lee returning now, which wasn't a given, but that does extend the window a little bit further, because Ioka Lee is now in like her 7th year of college basketball. So granted, she had a red shirt and a medical hardship waiver. So it's not easy to get to 7 years, but no. It is possible, especially with the COVID year. So I think I saw somebody say that by the time she plays her final game, she'll be like the oldest K-State women's basketball player of all time.
Yeah.
Like closer to being 25 than 24. I don't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But she's gonna go down as one of the all-time greats already, but her coming back, she can really make a push and hopefully leave a really great legacy and hopefully not forget how the end of this season felt.
Yeah. And then the other big piece of women's basketball news comes from you and I. I mean, with Ayuka Lee coming back, four starting spots are pretty well accounted for. Sundell, the Glenn twins, and Yoki, but they were sort of missing a four. Maybe this person fills that role, maybe they don't, but Kennedy Taylor is the transfer in from Missouri State, who was announced, I believe, a week before, and I think she may have committed in between episodes, and we just sort of forgot about it, because it was the day after we released an episode, but Kennedy Taylor is a two-time transfer now. She started her career at Colorado, then transferred to Missouri State. And her season stats last year are actually pretty solid, averaging nearly 11 a game, 10.7, 7.1 rebounds, shooting 50% from the floor. The only thing is she has not attempted a three in about 2 years. So like, maybe that makes her not the greatest fit for a four, but it's still a really good depth piece for K-State at minimum.
Yeah, it's a quality big to bring off the bench with some proven production at a admittedly lower level, but at the very least has shown to be productive, particularly her sophomore year, 12.3 points, 8.5 rebounds. It's really, really good. But yeah, she doesn't really, at least on paper, bring a lot of range, but she, in her two seasons of playing time at Missouri State, shot over 50% from the field, averaged double figures both years. Her stats were a little bit down this year. She only started 12 games this season compared to 29 as a sophomore. I'm not sure why that is. Could be injury. It could be something else. But yeah, this isn't... I don't anticipate her starting unless she develops a three out of nowhere. Which I would accept, but I'm not expecting. I think that we really wanted somebody to be able to spell Ayuka Lee while maintaining a similar game. Either that or maybe somebody to pair with at the same time, although I'm not as sure about that. Yeah. But she's at the very least a fairly quality addition.
Yeah, and I think at minimum she's an insurance policy because she'll be coming in as a senior. I think she's an insurance policy to give Imani another year to sort of develop. Because although she's technically going to be a redshirt sophomore, it really is her redshirt freshman season because I think she tore her ACL her true freshman year at Louisville. So she didn't get that year of development. So basically take all of her reps for that year have been mental. So you probably want to roll it back a year for where her progress is at. And I think if you look at it like that, I really like the pickup because I think I may be one of the biggest Imani Lester truthers out there. Connor, you and I have had this discussion, but it's a good insurance policy to my mind to have someone, you know, to let Imani sort of have those growing pains, but not lean on her while she's doing it.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of value to that. And if that's what Kennedy Taylor's been brought in to do, then that's great. Next year, if she can come in and be a really good rebounder, that'd be awesome because luckily we won't have to deal with Texas out-rebounding us like crazy since they're headed on to the SEC.
Good riddance.
But we will still have to be able to rebound effectively against everyone else, particularly when Ayuka Lee's not on the floor. So if at minimum that's what we see in Kennedy Taylor, then that's reason enough, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So that's it for the women's basketball news. Now we can talk about the Batcats news. Only four games, which is typical. I don't know why I said only. But it was a massive series down against UCF, who I believe is ranked 17th in the country now and was top 5 in RPI. When we were facing them. So UCF is a really, really good UCF team. Ended up only taking one in the series. But the first one, unfortunately, the Batcats fell 7-4 with UCF kind of pulling away late. And this was a pretty, solid game, first two innings, and then the errors came to bite K-State, which the fielding errors have gotten pretty noticeable recently. And that's also why fielding percentage is probably the worst stat to measure defensive efficiency. And yes, I will go on this rant every single time I am given the opportunity. But do you want to cover offense or pitchers?
I'll take the pitchers here.
Okay. So in terms of notable offensive performances, Chuck went 2-for-4 with 2 runs. Brendan Jones ended up going 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, two RBI, including a home run and a walk. Brady Day only 1-for-3 alongside Kalen Culpepper, 1-for-4, which I believe was his one hit on the series. Jaden Parsons, 1-for-3, and then the rest of the batting lineup ended up going 0-for. So you didn't really get anything from the back end of the lineup except for David Bishop collecting an RBI, I believe, on a sac fly. Yeah, it was on a sac fly. So in terms of offense, it's really top-heavy, mostly led by Chuck Ingram with 2 hits and Brendan Jones with 2 hits. And, you know, it's, like we said, UCF is a very good team, but we also have harped on this the entire season. We want the left on base numbers to be at least below 7 to be satisfied. We left 10 on base, and most of that was the relatively heavy hitters. 2 from Casey, 3 from English, and 3 from Jaden Parsons, which, strange. But, yeah, offensively, you can't be mad at 4 RBI, but you can be mad at 12 strikeouts and 10 left on.
Yeah, not the best day, and then 2 errors as well just makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Pitching, kind of a very up and down day. Josh Winthrop got the start. Went 3 1/3, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 4 strikeouts, no walks. K-State only walked 1 in this entire game. Adam Arthur went an inning, 2 hits, 2 strikeouts, so solid inning for him. Sam Roberts, he just pitched a third of an inning, faced 1 batter, got a 3-pitch strikeout, and was never seen again. Jacob Frost, he's been moved to the bullpen. Unfortunately, got credit with the loss here. He went 3 1/3, 6 hits, 5 earned runs, just 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, and 2 wild pitches as well. So the 5 strikeouts is pretty high for him. He's not really a heavy strikeout pitcher, but he did still get those numbers up. But it wasn't a great outing for him in his first bullpen outing, getting credit with the loss, and he definitely did earn that loss. He wasn't getting a lot of favors from the field, but 2 wild pitches and 6 hits, it's going to be really tough to overcome that sort of evening.
Yeah, and, you know, first game, like we're going to keep saying it, UCF is a really good team. You can't afford to have mistakes like that. And K-State managed to play a mostly clean game against them in the one game they ended up picking up, which was the Saturday matchup, ended up winning 4-3. Owen Borma ended up getting credited with the win here. Tyson Neighbors collects his 2nd save on the year. But Connor, you have the offensive numbers on a relatively quiet day, but with 2 stats in particular that are really, really good.
Yeah. Only 5 hits and 27 at-bats for K-State in this one, but they only struck out 3 times and they walked 7 times. So really, really good stuff there. Chuck Ingram, 1-for-2, had a sac fly and then walked 2 times. No strikeouts for him. Brendan Jones, 1-for-4 and drew a walk. A rare 0-for day for Brady Day, but he still did get on base. He drew a walk. Then Kalen Culpepper, 0-for-3, but did get an RBI of some sort.
He got hit by a pitch.
With the bases loaded?
Yes.
Oh, well, good for him. But he gets hit by a pitch. Nick English, he also gets an RBI on a sacrifice fly. Otherwise goes 0-for-3. Danny Rivera, 1-for-3, and also drew a walk. And stole 2 bases as well. And then got caught stealing 1. So he was very busy on the base paths. Was Daniel Rivera. Rafael Peltier went 1-for-3 with a towering, absolute destruction home run. A lot of baseballs really got clobbered down at UCF, but didn't travel as far as we're used to. Must be the humidity.
Humidity, lack of elevation.
Yeah, it's just a mix of factors, but still, he did just demolish that baseball, and he added a walk to it. Jaden Loebliner went 1-for-2 and drew a walk as well. A lot of stolen bases. Chuck Ingram, Brendan Jones, Kalen Culpepper each had one. Rivera with two. Loebliner had a double. Pretty solid day. Not a lot of hits, but K-State was getting hits when it mattered.
Yeah.
And this one, very good situational hitting. Drew a lot of walks as well. So pretty quality overall from K-State.
Yeah. And then in terms of pitching, only three pitchers on the day. It was Owen Borima, who went six innings, only three hits and two runs, only one of them earned. Two walks, seven strikeouts, one hit batter, 114 pitches. Jack Wentworth, two innings, two hits, one earned run, one walk, and a strikeout. And then Tyson Nabors came in the last inning to clean everything up, got a strikeout, didn't allow any hits or runs, only faced three batters. So, solid pitching performance. Borima, I think, sort of calmed himself down. I don't think he's pressing as much anymore. At least he wasn't this game, or maybe he just had it. But Borima had a really, really good start, collects the quality start as well, only giving up three hits. So this was a really good all-round performance for K-State.
Yeah, that's kind of going back a ways, I think, maybe towards a little bit after the season had started. This trio of Borima, Wentworth, Nabors was probably at some point in the year who we would have probably picked as our three best. But Borima's kind of finding his groove again. Wentworth continues to be really great, and Nabors is starting to settle in again as well. Though he hasn't been pitching a ton, I imagine that's we're just trying to take it easy with him.
Yeah, not trying to kill him.
Yes.
But the last game of the UCF series didn't go K-State's way. It ended up being a 6-1 loss for K-State, and this one made me angry. Well, actually, no, it didn't make me angry. It was kind of funny, because the broadcast was utterly insane. Every time you looked up at the ESPN broadcast, something weird and wacky was happening, such as eating brisket in the middle of the broadcast or having... Was it four mascots in the booth at one time in an inning?
It was at least four.
They showed the Osprey at the beginning of every game, but I think they showed him twice. It was a very strange game, including Blake Dean getting the start, who's normally been a sort of setup man whenever Jack's not available. But the big story is four K-State errors, and all of them extremely, extremely painful in ways that are sort of difficult to describe. But you're also not going to win any games only getting three hits with one RBI to 10 strikeouts and two walks. We only left four people on base. It's because we weren't getting on base.
Yeah, just a really embarrassing offensive performance.
Yeah, there's no one really even notable to go over. Chuck got the one RBI, but the errors, Kalen Culpepper had an error on a ball that sort of ate him up, which that happens at shortstop sometimes. Daniel Rivera, I don't want to dogpile on him because he knows damn well that he did not have a good game, but oh my goodness, he boots one ball and then immediately destroys himself on a throw I think probably a third grader could have made. It was really, really a tough performance for Daniel Rivera.
Yeah, one of those plays where he had an error. Pelletier also got an error
on the
same exact play that ended up making what should have been zero runs into two. And everything just kind of fell apart from there. But really brutal offensive day. There were probably a couple more occasions where we could have been credited with an error. I think they felt bad for us, maybe.
Yeah.
But, that's for a team that generally has pretty quality fielders. Third base has been a big issue, but it was a particularly rough day.
Yeah. And you can't really even pin a lot of it on the pitchers.
No. Blake Dean, he gave up four, but only two were earned. And you got a feel for the guy. I think it was his first weekend start.
Yep.
And he was just not getting any help from the infield. And that's the exact opposite of what any pitcher needs, but particularly a true freshman making a road conference start against a really good opponent.
Yeah,
because Dean otherwise was pretty good, I felt. Four innings, three hits, five strikeouts, two walks, only two earned runs. Just really got hung out to dry by the rest of the crew. Cole Eisenbaker, three hits, two earned runs, and one and a third. Hit a batter as well. Not his best day. He's been very hot and cold this year, which I suppose isn't too dissimilar to last year. Sometimes teams have him squared up. Other times he just deals, and you just never know which Cole you're going to get. Tyson Nabors went one and two-thirds and 29 pitches in this one. One hit, three strikeouts, so pretty quality for him. And Mason Buss, one hit in one inning. Just nine pitches for him.
Yeah. So it was a really disappointing end to the series, but you and I said our goal was to pick up one down at UCF, and we did. We ended up picking one of the games, which is what we needed to do against a really, really quality UCF team. And then on the return trip home, which I believe is going to be their last home game of this month?
Not of the month, but... it's the last one
for a week.
For a week, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it was a break and a long road stand. But the Wichita State game, K-State ends up winning 6-3 in comeback fashion in the eighth inning. And this was it was another sort of classic game where K-State ends up getting down 3-0 early, don't give up any runs after the third inning, and just sort of storm back to take the lead and win. It's a very similar script to the first time K-State played the Shockers. But, yeah, a few notable offensive performances here for you to cover.
Yeah. Chuck Ingram, he led off only 1-for-5, though, so not the best day for him. Brendan Jones, he had a 1-for-3 day with a walk. He had the lone double of the day for the K-State lineup. It was completely meaningless because the side got struck out, I think, after that. But Brady Day was excellent. 3-for-4, scoring two runs. Really, really good day for Brady. Then Kalen Culpepper did get caught stealing once, but went 2-for-4 with an RBI and scored a run. Nick English, 0-for-4, but I believe reached on an error and scored a run and had an RBI, just one strikeout. Only four strikeouts for K-State as a team in this one. Kyan Lotus, he was a defensive sub, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Parsons went 2-for-4 and added an RBI of his own. He got caught on the base paths. Lobliner, 1-for-2 with a walk. Then Daniel Rivera, 1-for-1 with two RBIs. He had a massive, I think it was maybe a two-out hit. I don't remember if it was 2 outs. But he came in and a pinch hit and was just had a really clutch at bat. Pelletier, 0-for-3, and then David Bishop, 1-for-3 with an RBI. David Bishop was making pretty solid contact in this game. Yeah. According to the K-State analytics, he had two of the top three exit velos from this game. But all in all, pretty quality stuff. A lot of bunts in this game.
A lot of really good bunts.
Yeah, Brady Day at one point had a fantastic bunt. Jaden Parsons had like a two-strike bunt.
That was perfect.
And it was perfect, and it worked. And there were at least a couple other bunts.
Pelletier should have probably legged one out if he was just a hair faster.
Yeah, he had a really, really nice bunt as well. On a very unorthodox... but it was very low. But P. Hughes, I think, was really enjoying himself for a while there because we just kept bunting and it kept working.
Yeah. Hey, if it's not stupid if it works. But in terms of pitching, Mason Buss got the start, weekday starter, sort of what we projected him to be at the beginning of the year. Goes three innings, five hits, three earned, only one strikeout and a hit by pitch. J.J. Slack ends up coming in four innings, only three hits, no earned runs, and four strikeouts. Massive outing for him. Jacob Frost ends up being the one credited with the win. One inning, one hit. That's it. And then Jack Wentworth comes in the last inning, gets the save. No hits, no earned, no strikeouts, no walks. Three batters faced, eight pitches, three groundouts.
Very efficient. Very, very clean stat lines for the last three pitchers in this one. Buss was the only one they were able to get to after those first three innings. They, Wichita State didn't really do much of anything at all. But yeah, Wentworth's up to six saves now. J.J. Slack, four innings of four strikeouts, just 46 pitches as well, which is really fantastic because we haven't seen a ton of J.J. Slack this year. When we have, it's been in small doses. So to just really randomly get four innings of very high quality work is super impressive. So big shout out to J.J. Slack, the hard-throwing lefty.
Yeah. But that is all of the games that have happened. The next Batcats games are going to be down in Norman, Oklahoma this weekend. Then a Tuesday, then a sort of quick back-to-back between UConn and Northeastern on Tuesday and Wednesday before a home series up against Oklahoma State. So there'll be five games between this episode and the next one, which, you know, none of those are small.
Yeah. And some RPI updates. UCF, I believe they were 7th in RPI going into the series, and they remain 7th. So that losing two of those games, it would have been great to win another one, but we didn't really lose anything in RPI and computer rankings. Wichita State's 104th, so we don't really gain anything from winning that. But our RPI right now is 25. So we're in a really good spot, especially compared to last year. That non-conference RPI is really helping us because our strength of schedule is just so much better. Yeah. But Oklahoma's coming up. They are 26th in RPI. And then UConn, they're actually down at 81st, but Northeastern is 36th. They're 25-7. I don't remember what conference they're in, but Northeastern was a regional team last year.
A-10?
Maybe. I'm not betting on anything, but Oklahoma State's coming up as well. They're those midweek games against UConn, Northeastern, they're 23rd in RPI. So six games against Oklahoma schools, all good. Oklahoma, they're 18-14, but that's going to be down in Norman. We've not had a lot of luck down there the last couple of times. And their record is deceiving because they have one of the strongest schedules in the country. Mm-hmm. So they're a very good team that has been kind of in and out of the top 25, sort of like we've been, where they've been either in the mid to low 20s or, you know, just off.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of quality opportunities coming up for K-State. But I'm going to be interested to see how they handle those midweek games, because we haven't had many Tuesday, Wednesday midweeks. We've had a lot of Tuesday or Wednesdays, but not a lot of times where we played both. So we're going to see if fatigue plays into it these next couple of weeks, because a lot more games maybe than we're used to.
Yeah, the last time we had a Tuesday, Wednesday was Tennessee and Clemson.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna try and steal one with Borma this time.
No.
So, granted, the caliber of opponent is significantly different, but still two quality teams with UConn, Northeastern, and then Oklahoma this upcoming weekend. They're no slouch either. I think that's another series where if you take one, you can't be too upset about it. But you're pretty happy if you take the series though.
Yeah.
Any road series, you got to be happy with.
Yeah, absolutely, given this team's propensity in years past.
Yeah.
But do you have any final notes before we sign off?
Don't let your emotions of the Batcats ride on a single game. Baseball is a long season. I'm partially saying that for myself.
Yeah, Royals are good.
Royals are surprisingly good. I might start caring about MLB again.
But yeah, that pretty much wraps up this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to follow or contact the show, you can follow us just about anywhere at AggievilleACats. And if you want to email us, we're AggievilleAllyCats@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on a more personal note, I am at ACEdward00.
I am at Connor Baltazar, capital C, capital B.
And if you want to support the show financially, please be sure to check out the official Aggieville Alley Cats merch store or the supporters link, both in our Twitter and podcast bios. But most importantly, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. Where come rain, shine, or anything in between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news you so love. Stay safe, Alley Cats.